Good morning. It's a Friday, the 20th of May. Joining us is, end of graduation.
End of graduation.
That's why you're wearing your colors.
Why I've got my Cal Poly button, repping Cal Poly this morning.
Things kind of made sense all of a sudden. Click. Joining us this morning is our kid.
Guess who?
Yes, Karen in person. Morning.
Good morning. Congratulations, graduates, last weekend. It was an exciting weekend.
And those yet to come.
And those yet to come. Yep.
Okay. Are you ready for our Why Do We Say That? And this one, okay, I'm going to continue in the category called That Makes Sense.
That makes sense.
Just to put a little pressure on things
here.
Because
you're talking to local government. It always makes sense.
Oh. Well, I've already used out of touch, so. Okay. Okay. Here we go. Why do we say make things hum? Something makes things
makes
hum.
Makes things hum. Ooh, Winston looks like he wants me to phone a friend. Why do we say it makes things hum? I suppose because when you're humming, it's like free and easy. So if things are humming, they're moving along swimmingly.
You really don't. No, that's moving swimmingly.
You don't
spend too much time down in the corp yard, do you? No.
Apparently we're going back to auto mechanics now.
Yeah, okay. Are you a go-getter whose ideas and leadership can put a business or cause into motion? If so, you belong to that rare breed of members who can make things hum. Once the spinning of cotton moved from households into mills, the hum of machinery came to be a symbol of Yankee progress. There were frequent breakdowns, though, during which a mill fell silent. It took mechanical knowledge and management skill. See?
There you go.
See? To produce the distinctive sound linked with productivity. Spreading from the processing of cotton, the mill-born phrase came to stand for a proficiency in any type of activity or enterprise.
The hum,
boy, no wonder you were close,
huh? Motor.
Oh, boy. I got a question for you. It's totally unexpected, but impact fees.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the current genre of post-Prop 13 revenue generation?
I like how you say current and Prop 13 in the same sentence.
That's
where we want to start here.
It's still kind of the whipping post
right, for
a lot of folks, even though it was, 76, so 30, 40, it's coming up on 50 years ago.
50 years
and it's
of Prop
still,
13.
Still
yeah.
being used as...
Well, and I do. In a lot of ways, we're still seeing the economic impacts of Prop 13.
Right? Well, that was the concept, wasn't it?
The benefits and the negatives to it.
Yeah.
And especially, I think, as we've seen housing prices, continue to grow and then skyrocket again, right? So, yeah, part of that Prop 13 to save housing from people that were able to purchase it 10 years ago and still be able to afford to live there. But we also have a lot of young families that quite simply can't afford to then purchase a house, I think, in large...
Putting pressure now on general plans and the housing... Listen to me talk like I know what I'm talking about.
So then you bring up impact fees, which are other ways for local governments or school districts basically to extract funds from development to offset impacts in their communities.
Now, that's
right?
The key word.
Right, extract.
Extract,
yeah.
Yes, yeah. Sounds like bone marrow transplant. Yeah. Don't worry.
No.
Don't worry. We'll just extract a little bit.
Yeah.
Does it run in violation of the spirit of Prop 13?
I don't think so, because I think Prop 13's initial goal was to be able to keep people in their homes that they could afford in the moment that they bought them, right? And that to see
and not willy-nilly charges.
Right, and see this crazy housing market go up, and then all of a sudden their property taxes triple and they can't afford the house, right? So these impact fees are levied on new development, right? So you're coming into the market then at that new rate, trying to find, as a community, still being able to find ways to build very affordable, moderate, and high-income housing still needs to be a priority in community to have all of those levels of housing. But for those individuals and those businesses in our communities that can afford that higher income housing to be able to have those impact fees that actually fund the services that you want to see in your community can be really important.
But those are also applicable for the startup homes and the ADUs and all the new stuff and the low end that the big emphasis is on now. And I would suggest that the percentage on some of those homes, while it's the same square footage, it makes it more impactful.
Right. But if you can find ways to help subsidize then those initial startup costs to make that housing affordable. So if you can find monies to come in and help pay for the infrastructure, pay for those impact fees to keep the initial cost to the developer and ultimately either the owner or the renter in those units affordable, you know, that is a way to then level that playing field a little bit.
So you got development fees that are in that are supposed to be justified in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain communities, though, that look at the long term and go, okay, property value of this building, of this structure, sure, is going to generate X amount over periods of time. We would rather have that development in our community rather than community down the road.
Right.
We'll discount development fees, or like Sonoma County in the Burn area, waive them entirely.
Mm-hmm.
So there is flexibility with that. Is there not the recognition of the long haul, or is there immediate needs that need to be funded today, even though things seem to be kind of chunking along okay?
How do you
arrive at those figures?
It is just tremendously community specific, right? When you compare us to...
Well, that's right. I'm not saying Arcata.
Right. Well, and you can. I mean, in some respects, I often think that Arcata is a really good example, right? Historically, Arcata steered away from large retail businesses that generate tremendous sales tax, right? Our dependency on sales tax is a lot smaller than a lot of the communities, say, in Sonoma or Napa or even the city of Eureka that has a lot more of that large retail, has a lot more of that sales tax to generate into their general fund. In a community like Arcata, where we don't have that source of sales tax, we start to look at how do we diversify our revenue, and then impact fees can become more critical in a community like ours.
It'll continue. KINS, News and Information, it's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Arcata City Manager Karen Diemer.
The state has money.
Yeah, that's got to be compounding. I was in Alabama this past week. I'm talking to buddies about Newsom's plan of $400 per car,
mm-hmm,
including the electric cars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd think I was a comedian. Is there any, with the May revise, with the projections for the budget, is there any sanity that you can see? I mean, to have a surplus of the magnitude that's being talked about,
yeah,
in light of the mental health issues, in light of inflation, yeah, in light of the exodus of businesses out of California, you'd think that they would be utilizing those dollars to retain businesses, help employers so that we are able to sustain the economies that we have,
right,
help out with some of the deferred challenges that the counties and cities have, and mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, am I missing something in the equation, or is it just because I'm not looking to run for president that
well,
I'm not really dialed in here?
Well, good thing neither of us are looking to do that. So
yeah, well,
I'm
yeah,
not sure that means that we're the most qualified to have the conversation on it, but You know, I think a couple of things. California, part of the tax system in California, generates income tax from capital gains. And 2021 was just a tremendous capital gains for a lot of individuals and a lot of businesses. And we have a tax structure that then capitalized, extracts on that, being the word of our day.
I was waiting for you to come around, yeah.
And so I think that the governor considers a lot of this, and it is like eye-popping, $97.5 billion surplus. I mean, it has to be the largest in the state's history ever. But I think that he views a lot of that as one-time monies. You know, those cap gains increases in 2021 were just tremendous.
We could throw jails and, you know, right. That's a one-timer.
Right. And so, like, when you bring up this $400 credit, that's a one-timer, right? So he's looking at, hopefully. Yeah, fingers crossed on that. And certainly it could be more for people. He is looking at reducing the state tax on diesel, you know, for a temporary period of time. And then, true to Governor Newsom, he is looking at the priorities that he had already set out in the January budget. He's looking at additional monies at some mental health services, at public safety in terms of both fire and health and wellness of policing, and housing. You know, he's still putting additional monies back into the housing.
But we're not hearing incarceration, which
nope.
you talk to anybody,
yep.
You know, and there's people out that shouldn't be out, and it's because the capacity isn't there.
There are people that need services that certainly are not receiving services. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, we just go to a hospital and see what's going on.
And see what's happening.
And I'm sure it's not just St. Joe's or Redwood or Mad River. It's got to be every hospital up and down the state. Dealing
I'm
with
sure.
something similar to that. And are these folks, I know you don't spend a ton of time in Sacramento, but you do stay at a Holiday Inn Express. Are these folks so insulated that they don't see what's going on? And the homeless camps outside of Sacramento, I mean, they're just all over them.
Yeah.
So why the lack of action?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say that this administration has put a lot of money into trying to figure out the initial housing piece and then trying to isolate.
Is that more critical than the mental health?
It's not more critical, but I think it is maybe less daunting to take on, right? Because there are multiple
Simpler
providers.
Fix.
Yeah, there are just multiple providers that can come into the housing world where it's just a very limited set of what really can operate in the mental health services.
So your project is kind of blending both. Sorry, I just had the thought.
Mm-hmm.
It's not setting you up on this one. Perhaps the next
You're
one.
You're always
will, but
setting
not this
me
one.
Up.
Your guys' little experiment out in Valley West,
is that
started? Or is there still the development of that or the impacts? What's going on with
sure.
that?
Sure. So both projects, both the Days Inn and the Red Roof Inn, have been approved by the state. So they were competitive sort of, but first come, first serve mostly to come in. And that's called Project Home Key. In the May revise, he's put additional, I think, $120 million into Project Home Key throughout the state. So there'll be more projects like this.
Is this a state program or a city program?
The Home Key is a state program.
But your projects are?
State funded.
Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, the city is just the intermediary, right? So for the Days Inn, the Arcata House Partnership nonprofit is purchasing and will operate that facility. The state money flows through the city to fund their operations. With the Red Roof Project, that will be owned and operated by Danco Communities. So Danco is purchasing that property. They have a contract with Redwood Community Action Agency to operate the wraparound services for the individuals that will be living in that project. But they will own and operate. Again, the state money flows through the city to help.
So you're basically
that.
Just giving them your blessing, and then they move on.
Yeah, so this is all state monies. I mean, there's just no way that our community, our size, would ever generate money like this to transition.
So if it works, what's the maximum capacity?
We have about 60 and 78, I think, between the two of them.
Okay.
So about 140, 135.
So, and what's the total investment in this thing?
We are going to be $29.32 million.
Per room, it's how much?
A lot. I'm humming here. Let's figure it out.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're coming up to a break. We can figure that one out. Is it replicatable in other communities in the area, or is this going to be by itself because of the huge investment?
No, completely. Well, as long as there are state monies coming in. There are several other projects. Many of them will be a lot smaller, But they can come in under this program.
It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:36. We're back talking shop. What, you cold now?
No, I'm good.
Oh, okay. With Karen Deemer.
Sparkling lemon water. It's all good this morning.
Whatever it takes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You guys had a little interesting dynamic earlier this week.
We did.
Censuring your own.
Mm-hmm.
Uncomfortable would probably be the first place to start. I can't imagine that. That was something that was entered into spur of the moment.
No, and I think the challenge for the council has been, you know, due process takes time, right? And so this was a process that started in October with the council, and they took some initial votes and I think took a lot of questions from the community because they couldn't share much information.
And is it personnel?
It's a personnel-related matter,
so
yeah.
You really can't share it an awful lot, yeah.
No, and so then the city hired an investigator and went through that investigative process, and that just takes time. And then that report was released a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago now. And so then I think it made it easier for the council to talk about this is why we were taking the actions and the steps that we took last October. Sorry that we couldn't share more of that with the community at the time, but we needed an independent investigator to come in and finalize. Yeah, what was, at this point, sustained findings within that investigation.
You're learning legalese, too, aren't
you?
Yeah,
we're learning it every
sustained,
day.
Sustained, yeah. Was the action that was taken, the council can't fire, in effect,
right?
Another councilman.
Sure.
Recall is the normal way. So what is the determination and the action that was taken? What is the impact of that?
Yeah. So the impact really was to take protective measures to protect staff from, you know, future potential harassment. So restricting access directly to staff, restricting access to parts of city facilities. Where our current council, so they'll restrict access for all of them, you know, to just basically say that you can access city facilities during normal business hours the way the general public would access them.
Oh, any council member.
Mm-hmm. They're going to take that amongst themselves.
Just broad stroke it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they did also authorize, so the city has an outside consulting attorney that has been supplied by our insurance pool, in essence, who has come in from out of the area to take the lead. And so they've also authorized him to work on a workplace restraining order.
One of the things that I have heard is a challenge for new council over the decades has been knowing where that line is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's certainly different with different forms of government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay. But to know, can they get on the phone? I get a call from somebody and there's a pothole. I mean, that's the stereotypical
one,
right?
Yeah.
So you call Public Works or the equivalent thereof. Hey, there's a pothole in front of da 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 da. Mm-hmm. Can you send somebody out there and fill it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, my base understanding with that is that that's towing the ragged edge. Because now you've put the staff member in a tough position because the boss is, one of their boss or their boss's boss,
sure,
is calling saying thou shalt.
Choose this paddle.
Or would you please, yeah. or can you consider? But right. regardless, the title is calling and there's undue, I mean, right. I guess it'd be undue influence. I mean, there's influence because of the title.
Right.
Gray line, gray zone, over the line, acceptable. What would that be?
For me, those reports, in the form of government that Arcata has, Eureka, actually all of the cities here in Humboldt County, is what they call a city manager form of government. Very different than what you see in county government, right? In Humboldt County in particular, right, you've got elected board of supervisors. Those are full-time jobs. And the department heads are appointed and work directly for the board of supervisors, right? In a city manager form of government or, you know, some types of county CAO forms of government, not Humboldt, but here in our cities, you've got a elected body that hires in Arcata two positions, the city attorney and the city manager. And then the city manager runs, you know, the operational day-to-day. So requests like that, even for a pothole, should all come through the city manager. And then we work with our department heads to prioritize how that work, you know, is fulfilled. I mean, that's an easy example. But the balance in the line is that you also want your council members to have all of the information that they need to be able to make the decisions, right? And as a city manager, I can supply a percentage of that, hopefully a really high percentage of that, right? But not 100% of that. So there are complicated issues. And just to cross over with what we were talking about with state budget, one of the things that cities will be advocating for is monies to come down to help offset the cost of implementing organics recycling, right? We talk a lot about state mandates that, you know, create policy at the state, create laws at the state, and trickle that down to the cities to pay for. This new, what we call Senate Bill 1383, is going to be a tremendous cost in this region to put a system in to recycle our organics. And that's a complicated process. So I need our expert staff at the city to be able to talk directly to the city council members and sometimes answer questions one-on-one.
But that's so coordinated
full, right,
with you in manager. Public setting. It's right. not me calling up Bob right. and saying, Bob, right. we right. got to talk.
Yeah.
I mean, that's outside the pale of
right.
acceptable behavior, right?
Yeah.
Does it happen often, or is that something that after a couple of weeks the newbies can't, oh, okay.
I'll run stuff yeah, through Karen, or I'll email. And
yeah,
then,
get kneecapped a couple times, and pretty soon you realize yeah. you don't need to go yeah. through that door.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, the hope is that your government is responsive enough. If a council member comes to me, I can take a look at what is that priority and either tell them, that is great, but that street is actually going to get a whole overlay in 6 months, so you might see a little coal patch thrown on that, but you're not going to see a substantial fix because that would be a waste of money with what we're going to be doing in the future. You know.
So there's that loop so yeah. that the elected can then go at least back. Now, I would think since most of these are quote-unquote part-time positions, that they got whatever they're doing for daytime.
Mm-hmm.
That's their job.
Mm-hmm.
Is it typical or traditional for me to say, worst case scenario, I'm on the Arcata City Council.
Mm-hmm.
You're still the city manager. For me to call you up and say, hey, I got, you know, Jane Smith has got this pothole. Can you give her a buzz?
Oh, all the time.
And let her know what's going on?
Absolutely.
And then the part-timer is out of the equation, and the system then steps up?
Absolutely. Yeah, and often communication runs through emails now, right? Because people think of it at 10 o'clock at night, and they don't always call, fortunately. But I often see emails that will get CC to me from a council member that will say, you know, dear constituent, thank you so much for reaching out. I completely agree. I drive that street every day. I'm CCing our city manager who can get back to you and let you know where that is on our maintenance schedule. Right. And so it's just an easy way to flip it. That constituent has direct contact with me then, and then, you know, can get their questions answered.
And then the part-time person remains a part-time person. Instead of hanging out in the hallowed hallways
right.
50 hours a week. Yeah. Right. Or, no, pardon me, 40 hours a week now. KINS, News and Information Time is 844.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:49. We're staring at a weekend with Karen Deemer.
We are.
Is there
a good one?
A kinetic race next weekend?
Yes, there is.
Is it the same as what it historically has been, or is it
rebuilding? It's rebuilding, but okay. I think they're trying to get as close to same as possible this year.
It's a signature event, certainly.
It is.
What is it like trying to orchestrate that thing? Yeah, even just the pathways for the vehicles to be able to get to where they're trying to get has got to be a challenge, let alone crowd control and now parking with some of the lots now being converted into housing structures.
Mm-hmm.
Shuttle buses?
No, I think the route itself will run pretty similar to what it's done in the past. I mean, it is a huge undertaking. I mean, I don't want to downplay that at all. They just have hundreds of volunteers that pull that event off in our community. And it is daunting. But I think as far as how do current development projects impact, I think they'll, they've got plenty of space.
You have skinnier streets now.
Yeah. Maybe they'll have leaner sculptures this year.
Yeah. More affected by the wind, not front to back, but side to side.
Yeah, and I haven't heard final numbers. I suspect that their ridership will be a little bit smaller as people just start to come out. But people are looking for events, within a driving distance. So I think we are going to have a really good summer of tourism on the North Coast.
That's what all the preliminaries are indicating, is that we're going to continue like we did last year. Regardless of what's going on with next wave or third wave or 58th wave, whatever it might happen to be, that the same things that brought them here before are going to be bringing them back again.
Yeah.
Are we ready?
Yeah, we're ready. Haven't you heard? Mazzotti's is open. We are ready in Arcata.
Are you getting a lot of the, I don't want to say traditional, but the types of businesses that were around the plaza in the shopping districts, are you seeing them coming back, or is it more the is Arcata more dealing with like the Eureka syndrome, where there's a lot of empty storefronts?
Yeah,
because of just things changing.
Yeah, what we're seeing is rebuild and expansion of the restaurant industry. That's where we're seeing our growth. What I think we are still seeing a loss of is the general retail. So
some of the national stuff is saying it's coming. It's going to be coming back.
Well, I like to hear that.
And it's driven by the youngers, not us old duffers, but the youngers that are doing that. Are you seeing the impact of Humboldt starting to manifest? Not on the pre-investment side, but on the actual sense of, okay, where are we going to be in 2 or 3 years and building out towards that?
We are seeing them gear up around the Craftsman Mall site for their kind of initial phase of housing, and where we're
they haven't started cutting boards and banging nails
not yet, but they've
summertime.
No, they will, I suspect that they'll get some activity hopefully underway in 2022, but it'd probably be late fall before they can get
things. It's when the weather's best.
Yeah, I know. How many projects do we still start in October in this community? It just does baffle me.
That's all part of the fun, isn't it?
But what we are seeing is numbers of enrollment for next year increasing. So, I mean, we won't know really until we get there, but the numbers are coming in looking really good.
Very cool. Enjoy your weekend.
Yeah, you too.
See everybody on Monday.